This week on Vaticano, discover the powerful story of Javier Sartorius, who traded a promising tennis career to help the poor and live the gospel radically. Follow us on a special pilgrimage through the places of St. John Henry Newman in Rome, as the Holy Father declares him a doctor of the church and co-patron of Catholic education. Join the Vitae Festival, the one-of-a-kind Jubilee celebration aimed at evangelizing non-believers. For this and more, Vaticano starts now. As part of a four-day series of meetings and activities, on October the 24th, colleagues and supporters from across Europe came together at the Vatican to discuss the network's current path in Europe and the opportunities that lie ahead. Opening the conference, EWTN CEO Michael Warsaw reflected on the network's growth and presented EWTN Next, a roadmap for the future rooted in the mission's enduring values. Warsaw also shared with the attendees his vision for how EWTN will continue to serve the church worldwide.
Our commitment as we move forward, our vision as we move forward, is to create the best content in the Catholic world, distributed on world-class platforms, and with a team of the very, very best people and partners that anyone could hope for. And we believe now, more than ever, that the content we produce, the stories we tell, transform lives, and through that transformation will change the world. That's our goal. That's our vision. That's our intent.
EWTN has been so blessed.
The discussion continued with Andreas Thonhauser, Vice President and Chief Global Officer of EWTN, who reflected on how crucial it is to operate in unity in today's interconnected world. He noted that working together not only fosters cooperation, but also significantly enhances the chances of being heard worldwide.
The time for doing everything by ourselves, even only country by country, is over. There is a beauty in thinking together on an international level. And then everybody will have to do their thing locally. Mother Teresa always said, and I really like this, is like, what I can do, you cannot do. And what you can do, I cannot do. But together, we can do something beautiful for God. I think this is something we can also take with us.
Following the Q&A session, which allowed participants to exchange thoughts and reflections on their work and mission, the conference continued with firsthand testimonies from EWTN's international staff, who spoke on stage about their experiences and meaningful moments of their journey with the network. The story of Javier Sartorius has reached Rome, where his family, friends, and production team presented the film Only Javier and had the chance to speak about him with Pope Leo XIV.
Si quieres ganar un torneo del club de tenis, basta con que juegues un poco bien.
The documentary follows the journey of a young Spanish aristocrat and promising tennis player who chose to abandon success and comfort for a life of radical faith.
¿Y cómo te llamas?
Me llamo Javier.
¿Javier qué más?
Fue un compañero de aventuras.
He was my companion in every adventure, like a twin. Even though we have other siblings, it was always Javier and Fernando, the two of us together.
No era Fernando solo, era Javier Fernando.
In their youth, the two crossed the Atlantic together, chasing opportunity in the United States. Fernando recalls that even in those years, Javier had a disarming clarity and honesty, a kind of transparency that would later shape his entire path of conversion. Javier was looking for meaning in life and more profoundness. First, he looked in Eastern spiritualities, then through volunteer missions in Peru, where he discovered the faith he had abandoned.
Javier se fue.
So then suddenly, when Javier left, he said to me, come with me. And I said, no, you go ahead. You go there. I'll stay here. And I became a personal trainer, and he became an athlete of the spirit.
Del espíritu.
The call didn't stop there. Javier entered a seminary for a time, but his desire for a more radical simplicity led him to leave and share life with people living on the streets of Barcelona. Eventually, he found his home at the Sanctuary of the Lord in the Pyrenees, where he embraced poverty, silence, fraternity, and service. An association named Javier Sartorius is now dedicated to sharing his story and testimony, with the hope of inspiring others and eventually opening his cause for canonization.
And this association asked the bishop if there could be a possible cause for sainthood. The bishop told us no. His life wasn't well known, and that's why we decided to make a film and a book.
For the film's director, José María Anglés, Javier's story that he portrayed in the film is not simply something to remember. It's something meant to awaken the heart.
In the end, Javier's life is a relentless search for a life of fulfillment, a life of meaning, a life that isn't just about accumulating pleasures and experiences, but about truly experiencing love and encountering God.
José María says that the movie does not present a perfect man, but a man who refused half measures, who wanted a love that was total.
And he said to Jesus, Jesus, what must I do to reach the kingdom of heaven? What must I do so that when I die, I can go to heaven? I do everything right. I'm good to my parents and so on and so forth. And Jesus said, look, I'll tell you what you must do. Go home, leave your family, sell everything you have and follow me. And he did. He followed him all the way to his death.
Y él lo hizo hasta la muerte.
Stay with us as we explore the life and legacy of Cardinal Newman, tracing his footsteps through the historic streets of Rome. Church has welcomed a new doctor of the church. On the 1st of November, Pope Leo XIV declared St. John Henry Newman the 38th doctor of the church. After leaving Anglicanism, Cardinal Newman spent 20 years living, working, and growing spiritually in Rome. There were several locations around the Eternal City that played a crucial role in Newman's faith journey. Rome's International Center of Newman Friends celebrated 50 years of their institute. And on the day of this anniversary, Father Hermann Geisler led over 60 pilgrims in this year's Newman Walk. Since his canonization in 2019, this pilgrimage has aimed to explore these places and help connect people with the saint on a more personal level.
We thought it might be nice to do something to make Newman known also to simple faithful, not only to scholars and to professors. So we had the idea to look to the places that are somehow linked with John Henry Newman here in Rome. He made the experience of the church universal, because still now in England, he had known a national church. But here in Rome, he was together with seminarians from Asia, from Africa, from America, and he experienced really the Catholic Church as Catholic. And that had a great impact on him. It helped him to experience the Catholic Church and to find joy and home in the Catholic Church. We tried to make out of that a Newman walk, which you can do on foot in 3 or 4 hours, visiting these places and telling a bit the story of Newman.
The walk is narrowed down to 9 locations, starting at the College of Propaganda Fide, where Newman spent a significant time preparing for the priesthood. All 9 stops are in one way or another a reflection of how Newman formed his greatest contributions to the church.
Yeah, Newman, of course, is a giant, and he contributed in many ways to the renewal of the doctrine of the church. his theology is very much influenced and made alive through Scripture and the fathers of the church. So he helped to renew theology, parting from Scripture and the fathers.
One of the stops is the Basilica of Sant'Andrea delle Frate, a church known for a Marian apparition that took place in 1842. In England, Newman already believed he was under the protection of the Blessed Mother. So when he realized that the church was just outside his window during his stay at Propaganda Fide, he took it as a sign of God's loving providence.
He wrote that in Propaganda Fide, he was really very happy. He said in one of his letters, "I was happy in Littlemore, happier even than in Merivale after the conversion, but most happy I'm here in Propaganda Fide."
Many of the Newman Walk participants were anticipating this pilgrimage for some time, as his figure is someone they have looked up to and have been drawing daily inspiration from.
We consider him our intellectual father, but also he inspires us a lot in our life of prayer. His sermons accompany us a lot. And then for me as a convert to the Catholic Church, getting to know his ideas has been something very influential for me.
Well, this was something I always wanted to do because I am very close to Newman in like I'm friends with him in a mystic way, and I always wanted to be here to do this walk, to know all the places that he has been to and that are relevant to his life.
Well, it's very important for a man who devoted his life to an authentic renewal of the church to experience Rome as he did. And for Rome, especially in this Jubilee year, it's important to understand Cardinal Newman's thinking about Rome and his thinking about the development of doctrine, of church teaching that's always faithful to tradition. So that's why I'm here today.
The walk ends at the Church of St. George in Villabro, his titular church, which is a church in Rome designated to a cardinal. To celebrate the Institute's 50th anniversary, the prefect of the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints, Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, joined the pilgrims in the evening and presided over the Holy Mass. Cardinal Semeraro played a big role in the process of recognizing Newman as a doctor of the church.
Egli ha scritto un'opera fondamentale che ha condotto a termine proprio nella fase.
He wrote a fundamental work, which he completed precisely during the transitional phase, from the Anglican Communion to the Catholic Church. It is titled The Development of Christian Doctrine. He experienced this development, this growth, personally from around the age of 15, with certain commitments that he soon became dissatisfied with, as they didn't quite match his desire for truth and goodness, which he ultimately left behind. And also through various attempts at university to understand what was truly the path Christ intended for the church, until he eventually concluded that it was to be found in the Church of Rome. So he made his choice, and he remained faithful to it, with suffering, with dedication, and with great loyalty.
Con sofferenza, con impegno, con una grande fedeltà.
Vitae Fest 2025 took place in Rome, gathering together young people, artists, and communities, all under one theme: don't burn bridges, become one. The music festival has the aim of promoting reconciliation with oneself and with others by way of artistic expression, electronic music, and shared experiences, a language of many young people around the world. The initiative is part of Vitae's wider mission of using art and mainstream artists as an instrument for dialogue with young people to feel included and renew their spirituality.
The goal is to invite the kids to enter in a journey to discover faith. We are sending a message of reconciliation in these days of, you know, so many conflicts, possibly more than ever. We are sending a message of reconciliation to stop fighting, to stop dividing, to stop hating. And it's a way, it's based on the ministry of reconciliation, that is Jesus Christ.
The festival took place at Parco Schuster, right next to the Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls,
It's not a coincidence, you know. The thing is, we're inspired in St. Paul. He had the capacity of talking in the same cultural language of different people, different countries, different nations. And that's the idea of this festival. We are talking to a different nation, the nation of the kids that don't know anything about Jesus. So we are talking their languages.
Bridging the worlds of secular music and faith is Father DJ Guilherme, a priest who also spins electronic tracks as a DJ. He went viral during World Youth Day in Portugal, captivating and surprising audiences across the globe. Through his music, he connects phrases from the Bible, encyclicals, iconography, and videos of popes in the electronic music he plays. And the youth are excited. He explains his unconventional path at becoming an electronic DJ after years as a military priest in Afghanistan and Kosovo.
In 2010, I was in Afghanistan, and I was organizing not only religious events, but also cultural events for the militaries, and also some moments for they relax with music. Someone told me that is there a sniper that is a good DJ? And I talk with him, and I invite me. I need you to organize a party here to reunite the militaries, to they relax a bit inside of the military camp. So he accepted the challenge. When I saw him play, okay, I don't even know what he's doing because he's amazing. That was the moment that I need to learn to do this. When I finished the missions as a military priest, I start on the DJ school, and some of my teachers now work with me on this project also. And that's incredible, yes.
Anna and her friends are young Romans and Catholics, and they're thrilled to be at the concert because it's the type of music of their generation. But also, they see it as an opportunity to include and unite people that perhaps have yet to begin their spiritual journey.
We're hanging out some flyers. These are little books where it's written about the hope that we have in Jesus and in God. And this is what it's all about. It's about God, and it's about hope, and it's about happiness in a world and in a history where everything is really sad. This time of history in particular is kind of hard for us, but we have a hope, which is God. So
Gen Z, says the co-founder of Vitae, represents a real window of opportunity for the growth of the church.
They are spiritually curious. They are rationally, emotionally near to the church because they are interested in history, mystery, and the church is full of that. That's the reason why there is a growth in the church, especially in men, in young men, that is something amazing. And they are very sensitive to the arts. You know, it's a very special generation. It's definitely a window of opportunity for the church, Gen Z.
After the break, experience how faith and creativity come together to renew the church's artistic heritage. Beautiful artistic event set in the stunning interiors of the Museums of San Salvatore and Lauro in Rome marks the third edition of a remarkable project aimed at reviving sacred art, titled Let's Paint Catholicism Again. In response to the dramatic decline of the tradition of Western religious painting, a group of international intellectuals has launched a 21-year initiative that brings together artists, theologians, and art critics in a shared effort to renew the visual language of Catholicism for the modern era.
we decided to follow the mysteries of the Holy Rosary, painting a new mystery each year. Someone might ask whether the masterpieces already painted are not enough. I'm convinced they are not. We are deeply convinced that each generation must tell the Christian mysteries in the language of its era. We are doing the same.
In the current edition, 20 painters were tasked with interpreting the second mystery of the Rosary, the visitation of the Blessed Virgin Mary to Saint Elizabeth. Each artist created two pieces, one intended for placement inside a church and another designed for private devotion. The works depict a very special encounter between the two women, both miraculously expecting a child, meeting under extraordinary personal circumstances.
Theologically speaking, this encounter gives rise to the joy of a meeting between the elderly woman expecting her baby and the young woman who believed in the word, listened to it, and opened her ears to hear the word that became flesh. So, in this whole situation, it is a situation of joy. It is truly an encounter with God Himself.
The exhibition is run by the St. John Paul II Institute of Culture at Rome's Pontifical University of St. Thomas Aquinas, well known as the Angelicum, and the St. Nicholas Foundation from Poland, in collaboration with the John Paul II Foundation.
During the presentation, I quoted several passages from the letter of Pope John Paul II to artists, in which he asked men of culture, painters, and all those who have the ability to create beauty to continue this work also in dialogue with the Church. This seems very important to us, especially in our times, when we notice also a movement that opposes Christian culture and does not even want to hear about God, who is the creator of all beauty.
The truth that can be discovered by meditating on the beauty of these paintings, often inspired by the great masterpieces of the past.
In my work, I am inspired by Italian painting, in particular, the paintings of Sandro Botticelli. And in the case of this painting, I was particularly inspired by the painting Madonna del Magnificat, where Mary is holding the baby Jesus. I wanted to show this gesture here.
The exhibition is part of the official program of events for the Jubilee Year 2025, held under the patronage of the Vatican's Dicasteries for Evangelization and for Culture and Education. The artists and organizers had the honor of presenting one of the paintings to Pope Leo XIV during an audience in St. Peter's Square, where they shared with the Holy Father the vision and message of the entire project. The Pope graciously blessed the initiative, offering his support for its mission to renew the tradition of sacred art in today's world.
Why sacred art cannot fall? Because it's part of a church tradition. It helps us understand the mystery of Christianity and contributes to the Christian imagination, without which Christianity will become mute. Art, I'm absolutely sure, art is not a luxury, it is a necessity.